The case for basic science research. It may not be heavily branded or supported always by big money, but our guests now say basic science research, the kind that's necessary for things like more targeted medical advances, is getting harder to fund. And without it, we might be missing out on big breakthroughs, treatments, cures, and diagnostic tools.
Rebecca Ryan wrote about the need for basic science research in Madison Magazine. She's an economist, author, and futurist, and she's the owner and founder of Next Generation Consulting. She joins us now.
Also with us is Caroline Alexander. She's a professor in the McArdle Laboratory for Cancer Research. That's the Cancer Discovery Wing affiliated with the UW-Carbone Cancer Center. Rebecca, welcome to the show.
Great to be back. How are you?
Good. And Caroline, thanks for joining us up here in the studio.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Rebecca, let's start with you. What do we mean when we talk about research on basic science?
Yeah. So, well, I learned this from Caroline, actually. When you think about cancer research as an example, there's the basic research, and this is the research that, could pursue nearly any end. And it basic research is fundamental to the kind of research that leads to discovery drugs because new methodologies. So basic research is done by PhDs like Caroline. They come up with these interesting findings, and based on those interesting findings, we get to do clinical trials. So without basic research, we don't ever come up with things for clinical trials. So it's really the fundamental layer at the bottom of the research pyramid.
And Caroline, you use a different phrase, as I understand it, discovery research. Why is that?
Right, because I think basic research sounds a little dull and as if it is 101 basic research, and we might be a little bit slow off the mark. But I actually think that it is the basis for every other discovery. You have to know how the processes work. And it can sound very eclectic, and you may well be working on red-striped Drosophila fly bottoms, but, there is going to be some genetics behind that that might be telling for some cancer discovery in the future.
And Rebecca, is part of the solution, and we'll get into the funding issue in a minute, but do you think this idea of rebranding it, just kind of talking about it in a different way, something like discovery research instead of basic science, is that something that's going to make a difference, make it a little sexier for funders?
Yeah, I really do think so. I mean, the way that I got interested in reporting this story is because I met Caroline through some mutual friends, and I just said, what are you working on? And she said, the funding for the kind of research I do, and she described it as basic, and I said, oh my gosh, Caroline, that is a huge branding problem. That is not sexy. We need a sexier term for this. And it got me interested in the whole story and what's at stake for Wisconsin.
And Caroline, why is basic science discovery research, do you think, not getting enough funding?
I think there was an initiative that came from the National Cancer Institute that research should be more translational. And that suggested to everybody that they should be translational. In other words, they should be taking drugs into the clinic, which is an enormously expensive process. And frankly, we're not ready. We're not ready with all these new ideas to translate them to the clinic. It's always a stage-wise process. And we've got lots more leads ready to go. As you know, cancer treatments are not perfect. So we have a lot more work to do to find out what is perfect.
Well, Caroline, let's look back in the past a little bit. What has been the payoff in terms of cancer treatments from basic science over the decades, maybe even the last century?
I think it's all come from basic. It's a question of it's a question of timeline. So perhaps for any given drugs, for example, our department, the McArdle, Charlie Heidelberger was the originator of the most widely used cancer drug. If anybody knows any cancer treatments, they've probably been administered something called 5-FU. And he was the originator of this drug, and he was looking at how to inhibit cell growth. And that's a very basic process in the test tube, and that basically the first 10 years of its life, any given lead might spend in a little test tube in somewhere in a back office in a basic research lab before it begins to be translated towards the clinic. So most of its lifetime, it'll be at the bench. Hmm.
And Rebecca, do you think part of the funding problem, the reason that people aren't latching onto this, is because the time scale is longer? People think, hey, let's start where we are and get a cancer drug that might be on the market in 3 years instead of fundamental research that might open up a lot of doors in 10 or 20 years.
I think that is one of the issues, Rob. I mean, absolutely. You know, our attention spans get shorter and shorter. When you think about who approves these budgets, these people are trying to get reelected, and they want to be able to show results, right? And things that they funded brought results. So we do tend to take less of a long-term approach to this. But, you know, I also think the other thing that's happened is when you look at the number of science writers who, you know, write for major, you know, daily or weekly or even monthly publications, it's gone down and down and down. And so I think I speak for myself as a layperson. I don't have a high science IQ. I don't know many people who do. When Carolyn and I sat down together, you know, I was like, wait, you got to like break this down for me. I don't even really understand everything that you're talking about. And because we as American citizens don't have a high science IQ, we don't even understand that basic research precedes translational research. So it's hard for us to prioritize it or ask our, you know, elected representatives to prioritize it. So I think it's a series of issues.
And Caroline, you're a cancer researcher. I would like to think that you spend most of your time in a day researching cancer. How much of your time ends up being devoted to raising funds to enable the research you do?
At the moment, all of it. Pretty
really?
Much, almost all of it. It's I think the average person might be putting in a grant every month at the moment, and one of these grants might take you 6 weeks to prepare. So if you do the math, you're spending nights as well. So,
well, and if you're doing it, sorry, Rebecca, just a moment. But if you're doing it in terms of I'm applying for a grant for a year, you know, here, and then maybe I get it this year and not the next year. How does that affect the research? Is this the kind of thing where you need to be doing this for 5, 10 years at a stretch and know you're going to be doing it to really make sense of what you're looking at?
Right. So the big federal grants tend to be 5 years long, which is a good time to hire somebody and train them or for a graduate student to develop a thesis. So these are long-term projects. You can't hurry science. It's like love.
And Rebecca, sorry, jump in.
No. Well, what I just wanted to say was, you know, that was the other piece, what you just mentioned about, for example, Caroline's use of her time. Caroline, well, you know, won't talk about this. She's a brilliant researcher. Everyone I met at McArdle is working on amazing breakthrough science, and it just sort of killed me as an economist to see how much of their time was spent writing grants and in front of their computer instead of coming up with the next, you know, possible theory that should be chased. I mean, I feel like it's a huge waste of human training and potential to have these brilliant researchers just filling out these mind-numbing grant requests instead of focusing on where their highest, best use and training is.
Well, I wonder if another stumbling block is the idea that many of these discovery research projects, basic science research projects, will ultimately go nowhere. It's kind of like investigative journalism. Sometimes you put the time in and there's nothing there. Is that, do you think, Caroline, a stumbling block for, say, politicians or philanthropists who want to fund this?
It's true. It doesn't go nowhere, but it might not show up in the clinic. That's correct. It's kind of building on the shoulders of giants. So it's a slow process of accruing knowledge. So yeah, they take a risk.
And you are trying some innovative ways to communicate with even smaller, lower levels of philanthropy to say, hey, here's the difference your funding is making. How are you doing that?
Well, I actually think it goes deeper than that, because I think perhaps talking to Rebecca's point that it's really important to help people understand what we're doing. I think there's so much suspicion about scientists, and so it's kind of one of my ambitions to have the McArdle Laboratory for Cancer Research be on the tip of the tongue for Wisconsin people, because it's a fantastic institution. I wonder if they know how amazing it is. 75 years of really consistent productivity. I have to say, I heard of it first in a little college in Canterbury in England, and my mentor at the time was on sabbatical in Madison, and the excitement that came back to Canterbury was what convinced me to come here. So that your reputation goes far and wide, and I wonder if people in Wisconsin know what they have here.
Rebecca, Caroline mentions the reputation this kind of thing could bring to Wisconsin. You also touched on the possible economic benefits of putting money into basic science here in the state.
Yeah, and this is, you know, when we talk about the future of research, you know, we often talk about how it's going to impact you or me or someone we love who is diagnosed with cancer, but we also should think about our sons and daughters and their economic future. And, you know, one of the things I think we can be really proud of is that, you know, the spinoffs from McArdle, so we have in the Madison area, we have ProMega, we've got a cluster in Wausau, we've got spinoffs that have come directly out of McArdle. We have a whole sector now in this state of people who are paid very, very well in biomedical careers, and that came from the 75-year investment in McArdle. So this is about curing cancer, absolutely, but this is also about the economy of the state and really good paying jobs and being in a knowledge-based economy. And that's, I think, exciting for my kids and grandkids and, you know, everybody we care about for generations to come.
And Caroline, before we wrap up, you talked about some of the discoveries over the years from McArdle. I know in Rebecca's piece you mentioned frustration that some treatments haven't changed in a long time. Where do you see the potential for the next big development in cancer treatment coming from the kind of discovery research you're talking about?
Well, we would hope that we would be able to, I mean, breast cancer treatment is not the way to go. It should be prevention. So we can't afford to have 1 in 8 women developing breast cancer over a lifetime. That's an impossible mental burden. It's an impossible financial burden. So it's really about understanding the disease and prevention. To me, I think that's the big hurdle that we have to overcome.
Leave it there for now. Caroline, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Rebecca, thanks to you as well.
My pleasure.
That was Rebecca Ryan, founder and owner of Next Generation Consulting, and Caroline Alexander, professor in the McArdle Laboratory for Cancer Research.